Welcome to the Communicate with Confidence podcast, the podcast that aims to take the fear out of communicating. I'm your host, Amanda Jane, originally from the north of Ireland and now living in beautiful Cheshire, England. Did you know your potential is reflected in how you communicate? There are many scenarios where our communication skills let us down, but they don't truly reflect who we are or what we can actually do. We never get a second chance to make a first impression. So it makes sense to learn as much as we can about this skill that we all need. I am a communication coach and I'm passionate about taking the fear out of communicating. There are many myths around communication and I hope to explore them through this podcast. So stop missing out on opportunities and join me as we communicate with confidence, brought to you by AmandaJane.co.uk. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Communicate with Confidence podcast. And I'm your host, Amanda Jane. And today I have with me Ollie Daniels. Hello, Ollie.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me. And you work in hospitality and you're a trainer and coach. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Before we get into that, we will do our three questions. So have you got a favourite motivational song?
Yeah, so I had to give this one some thought, actually, and all of them some thought, actually. So what I went to is I'm a runner, so not by trade, but my personal, my biggest hobby is running. So I run sort of 4 to 5 times a week. And fingers crossed, I'll get into the London Marathon next year, but that's a different story for a different
Fantastic. Time.
So now I was thinking about what songs get me going when that's the motivation I need. So occasionally I'll listen to a podcast to start with, and then I'll end on music. But if I'm dragging and I know I'm on mile 10 and I've got 3 to go over half marathon, what song am I going to put on? And the one which stuck to me is the theme tune from Grandstand.
Really?
I don't know if you know it.
I'm trying to think. Yes, I do. It's one of those ones that... Yeah, you'll know it. It's quite iconic. Wow, I never would have thought of that one. That's brilliant. So that's the one that gets you running and pounding the streets. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's a really good song, actually. but I think whether it's to being a kid and watching sport on grounds or there's something, I'm sure a psychologist could think there's a reason. Yeah, but for me, that just it's the beat of it. It's everything. Yeah. It just gets me going when I'm running.
Fantastic. I love that. And do you have a favourite motivational quote?
Yeah, so I like a good quote. I think there are a lot, but I think there's one just at this moment in time for the last couple of years has really stuck with me. And it's, do you know the TV show Ted Lasso?
I've watched a few episodes. Yeah,
it's just simple. It's be a goldfish, and it just relates to the goldfish has the shortest memory in the world. So it's the happiest animal in the world, being in the world. And for me, what I interpret that to mean is, look, you are going to make mistakes in your life. People are going to upset you. You're going to fall out with people. You have a disagreement with someone. You're going to make a mistake. Be a goldfish about it. Forget about it. Move on. I'm really big in we will all make mistakes in our lives, in our careers, whether you're a leader, whether you're a trainer, whether you're a coach, whatever it is you choose to do, you're going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about the mistake, but just forget about it. Does that make sense? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, move on. Part of
your learning. You don't learn unless you make mistakes. So for me... biggest sort of motivation is keep being a goldfish, keep trying things, keep trying new things, keep making mistakes, be a goldfish about it and move on to the next thing.
I love that. That's a good philosophy. And you're absolutely right. You will never learn unless you make mistakes. And I wish that was built in a little bit more into everyday life. And I'm trying to think of an equivalent. I think it's my sister that says this from Finding Nemo, just keep swimming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost the exact same.
Yeah.
It's the exact same. And I think the other ones I kind of like all relate to trying and keeping on going despite making mistakes. So that's
Getting on with it. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there were times in my life where I would have spent too long ruminating over I should have done this but now I think I can just that didn't quite work out, I will do it this way the next time. And you just never evolve if you're constantly beating yourself up, and that is such a waste of time. But you have to accept that the mistake happened, learn from it and move on, because it's impossible not to make mistakes in life. And also I think if you're working in a culture where you're hammered for mistakes, that is not good.
It's
definitely not good. So what about reading? Do you read?
More audiobooks these days. I do struggle with reading, but I've sort of I've come to three, basically. To whittle down, but I've come to three. So the first one, it's probably this one overall, but the other two, certainly in the last 18 months, I've really enjoyed, is a book called Be More Pirate.
Right. I'm not familiar with that one. I'll add it to my list.
I might have got that a little bit wrong, this pronunciation surname, but essentially the book is about taking lessons from pirates, and not necessarily the pirates you see in the films, but actually who the pirates were, and they were pioneers. They were the first sort of people to have democracy. You know, you used to vote for the captain on the ship and you get rid of them if you didn't want them. And they were very equal places overall. People from different backgrounds weren't necessarily treated any differently. You were all a pirate on the ship. But it's how you can take the lessons from the pirates and apply them to everyday life, or being an entrepreneur or a leader or any whatever it is you want to do now, or setting up a side hustle. It's very much about that. It's a really interesting book.
It sounds fascinating. How interesting, those principles that are transferable anywhere. And I love that, the whole democracy thing. Yeah, I will definitely look that up.
I think you look at it, sometimes people look at the Stoics. Everyone, I read stuff about Stoicism quite a bit, and people apply that to modern day life. But this is just coming from a different place with it. It's looking at another successful group where they were successful, and then implying their learnings from that. The next one, it's not so much the book, but it's the philosophy, and it's Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Oh, yes. I should be familiar with that, shouldn't I?
There's a couple which are really similar, but I just like that ability. It's coming back to that mistake thing I was saying again, and growing and having that mindset that it's not impossible. It's not, you can always learn, you can always grow, and not being stuck in that sort of fixed box of, I am never going to get that promotion. I am never going to be able to run that pace. I'm never going to find true love. Whatever it is, you're boxed in, and we've all got these things we think we're boxed in. That book and that philosophy has really helped me with some of those things that I've boxed myself into and been caught in a fixed mindset about. And then the third one is a book called The Art of Resilience by Ross Edgley. Do you know the book?
I don't know that one, no. So, but I love the word resilience.
Resilience is a topic that I'm really passionate about. And he swam around the UK.
Wow.
First person to ever do it.
And as far as the whole way around, not just the channel, the whole way around.
No, the whole way around. He didn't come on it once. He was obviously staying on a ship, so he'd stay on a ship overnight and get up and swim the next day.
Wow.
And he had all sorts of things happen to him. His father got very ill during it, and that just spurred him on to finish. So it's very much about how his resilience helped him achieve that, like, sort of phenomenal thing. He is not what you'd expect from a swimmer, sort of lean and trim. He's got quite short and stocky build. So it's really an interesting read for anyone. If you're passionate about the topic of resilience, I really recommend that book, or as an audio book as well. It's quite good.
Wow, amazing. I'm fascinated by resilience as well, and tolerances and the things that people have to endure and what they go through. So thank you for that. That's incredible. Really interesting to add to the ever-growing book list and all of those things. Thank you. And I also love audiobooks as well. So let's dive into your leadership journey and your trainer and coach journey. So can you share any key milestones that have shaped your career, and what stands out as the most memorable?
It's really difficult. I suppose my sort of career is really typical of anyone who works in hospitality. I started working behind a bar to make some money. I was at university at the time, and I never stopped. And it's really difficult to look back on set milestones. I think first becoming a manager of people was quite a big milestone for me. So I did that. And that was a milestone. And then the realization, actually, that my time doing that was up. I did it for about four and a half years. And like, my mental health had become really weak. I was struggling with a work-life balance. I wasn't a good manager. I'd stopped being a good manager. I stopped really. Even though I cared, I just was done. I was cooked, because it was long hours. And I still loved it. It was really weird, but I could just tell that I was cooked. I think I'd come back off holiday and I'd come back in and it just wasn't where I was. And I think that was then my milestone is, well, what the hell am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. Because I've been working towards this for a long time. And I sort of, I'd always liked the idea of training and sort of that. And then literally within a few months, I was in the training team in the company I'm in, where I was doing a few things. And then COVID hit, which was lovely. I did my first apprenticeship during COVID. And then I suppose an opportunity came to sort of, well, what apprenticeship am I going to do next? And I looked at sort of an LN, sort of a CPID associated one, sort of L&D qualification and coaching. I spoke to a couple of colleagues who'd done this and it just swung me. Mm. It's always something I sort of heard about and I'd done a bit of, oh, I can coach someone. I know the GROW model. and it has, I suppose, massively this apprenticeship has improved me. Like, I just made me realize some things I want to achieve myself personally. Mm. And it's made me, I think, a better listener. I think that's been really key. My natural instinct is to my voice to be heard at every single point and to butt into every single conversation. I'm a trainer and I'm that person, a trainer who's going, what about this? What about this? What about this? Before this?
Yeah.
I'm very much that. Mm. And this has helped me the majority of time. Still not always. It's given me the tools to fight that person in me who won't shut up.
I'm nodding because for our listeners, Ollie and I have studied the same course. I've gone through it and Ollie's just about to do his exams. And yeah, everything you're saying, I am nodding because I completely understand where you're coming from. It takes everything you thought you knew, turns it inside out, and yeah, forces you to behave in completely the opposite way with a coaching qualification. But yeah, listening and the self-awareness as well, it just, yeah, what you thought you knew isn't in that way at all. So along that journey then, did you have any leaders or role models that inspired your style? And that doesn't have to be anyone famous. Was there anyone along the way that, because you described sort of getting to the end of your rope and thinking, I don't want to do this anymore. Was there anyone in that inspired you or that you look to for inspiration?
Difficult one. So I'm actually going to go down the route towards people who are famous, and I might touch on this to why later on. But so for me, whatever you think of him as a difficult manager, as a leader, I think Gareth Southgate's a very good leader of people. I think he's really, mm-hmm, if you listen to people who've played for him, he's very emotionally intelligent. Mm-hmm. And I think what he said, where I was in a leadership role for a while, not so long ago, before a restructure. And something he said changed my leadership style slightly. And it was a quote by him, he goes, if my players need me, I'm here for them. But if I don't, I'm just going to wish them good luck. And actually, that leadership style, to me, is almost being situational, basically. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your people don't need you. So they might need you to be there for them. But sometimes people don't need you. So don't force yourself on people. You're not a bad manager, a bad leader, a bad trainer, whatever it is. If you're not constantly on your people,
yeah,
if you're supporting someone through something, you only need to be there for them when they need you. I think the key there is that word need you, not want you. Mm-hmm. So that would be one. And a sort of another one from the world of sport, and I could go on about leaders from the world of sport for ages, mm-hmm, would be Ben Stokes, who yet again is the England Test cricket captain, is a very emotionally intelligent leader, very empathetic with his team, very much manages them to what they need, has very much makes reasonable adjustments for people based on religion and lifestyle choices, and leads from the front and by example, which mm-hmm is another thing I think is really important.
Yeah.
You can be a very, I think I often chat, when I chat to people, I chat to lots of deputy managers and kitchen managers in our business about leadership styles. I talked about laissez-faire, sort of mm-hmm very, you know, delegation. Oh, the manager sat in the office. I'm like, well, mm-hmm, it's not quite that for me, because actually they could still be leading from the front. They can still be leading by example, but they're not telling you what to do because you know what to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real, for me, when I look at leaders, I just look at that ability to manage the correct person at the correct time. There's people I know and I've seen, and that managing different generations, I think, people with emotional intelligence for me and leadership that I see as being great role model great role models.
Yeah, I completely agree. And again, just from the experience that we've gone through with our coaching qualification, we've gone probably to a level that most people don't, understanding emotional intelligence. And you see it in a different way, and you appreciate it more when you do see it in a leader. And you agree with what you've just said there. You know, you take a step back and you just think, wow, that was done really well. That was done with heart. That was done with empathy. That was done with fantastic emotional intelligence. Yeah, interesting perspective on that. And in the sporting world as well, because of, you know, we've talked about coaching and all the analogies that we do. It's very, how can I put this? It's more visible in sport, really, do you think? Because the coach is visible because of the high profile nature of it. So they're front and centre with how they lead, and also probably more criticised than most. But when you see it done well, it's very highly visible, and the results are visible as well. But and also if it doesn't go their way, then they're absolutely annihilated. But I think the emotional intelligence angle there is really interesting, that people like us observe it and see it. How important do you think communication is in leadership? And can you think of any examples where it went wrong or possibly right?
I think it's phenomenally important in leadership. I think that one thing people mistake when they talk about communication is they think it's verbal, body language, and how they're saying it, and it is that. But I think what everyone forgets when they talk about communication, and this has come from the apprenticeship, is the listening. So I think anyone, when I look at leaders and I look at them and I see, yeah, I've seen leaders before, you know, higher up people in companies who are great communicators, politicians who are great communicators, whether you agree with them or not, great communicators, great orators. Barack Obama being a great example, a great orator, yeah. Right? And that's a brilliant communication. But the real key before you can do that for me is to be able to listen to the people, what they're saying. I've been in leadership and I've sort of done it a couple of ways and I've not listened. I've gone my way, that's the correct way. Mm. Or I've listened, I've gone, oh, that's great. And I've gone, my idea is much better, so we're going to do that. And I don't necessarily think a great leader needs to be a great communicator. I think they need to be a great listener. I think they need to show that ability to really, really listen to people. They need to clearly communicate their message to people. I do sort of say you've got to have a vision, you've got to be able to communicate that vision. But I think if you're a higher up leader, or if you're in a certain position, you can get someone else to communicate that message for you. I don't think you can get someone else to listen to what's going on and what's around you.
What is it they say? Listen to understand rather than listen to respond. Again, learning to listen deeply and wholeheartedly to what that individual is saying and truly listen deeply is a skill that not a lot of people have, but that is the art of true communication, isn't it? Just to be
listen.
To develop that skill, and it takes work. It's not something that you can just suddenly do. It's something you have to constantly work at and learn and develop and improve on time after time. But yeah, you're right, no one else can do that for you.
You'll probably bit some to me, you'd much rather talk for an hour to somebody than listen to someone for an hour. I think it's so much harder.
It's hard work though, isn't it? If you're, because you actively have to, I try, for, you know, for me, I try to lean in, eye contact, all the things that we get taught. And then sometimes I think, I'm looking too closely, I'm looking too intently, I'm staring and, you know, trying to do it naturally. But to be a good listener, people really appreciate that you've taken, you know, that you've been that good listener. But it's the key thing. If you can master being a good listener, it's a skill that'll take you, I think, everywhere. And also being a good listener, you can also hear things when you're not supposed to. That's also another skill. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that one. So how comfortable are you speaking in public and being visible and being, yeah, how comfortable are you putting yourself out there?
My job is to put myself out there. I regularly stand up in a training in front of people from 8 to 20 people in a room. And I am comfortable, but I'm also not. So I suffer from really bad imposter syndrome from time to time. I didn't really know what it was for a while until someone sort of spoke to me about it. So an example would be, like last night, that imposter syndrome in my head's going, you got to do this podcast tomorrow. Like, who are you to be on it? Credentials, like very much that. now in my current job, or sort of previous where I've been training, if I am training a group on something, well, you never did this when you worked in pubs. You never did it that way. Who are you to tell these people? Remember that time you didn't do it that way? And that sets me back and has done. But what I've done now is I've noticed it and I've named it. So I noticed the voice and I've named it. I think I call it Igor the Imposter.
Wow.
There's a vision of what it looks like in my head. Some of the Demogorgon from Stranger Things, something very similar to that, sort of like massive sci-fi thing of all my bad thoughts. And all I do is I go, yeah, thanks for that. Thank you for raising that to me, because you've now given me the motivation to prove you wrong. So I am actually really comfortable standing up and communicating with people. Maybe less comfortable on social media, but certainly in a room of people, I'm comfortable. But I will always have that voice of doubt and that imposter syndrome in my head. But I now have a tool to manage it. And I go, oh, thank you. Thank you for raising that concern to me. I'm going to prove you wrong. Or I know you're wrong because I've done this before. Or actually, what you're telling me doesn't actually matter.
Wow, that's an incredible description. And thank you for sharing that. I've been really interested in imposter syndrome and spent quite a lot of time studying it. Obviously, when I was studying my coaching qualification. And it can be really, really debilitating. It can stop people in their tracks. And doing a lot of inner work, as you've obviously done, it can free you so completely. And for me, what I did, I find really useful, was journaling. And not in the sense of writing reams and reams and reams of paper, but mine was evidence-based. So okay. I went through the same thing that you did. Who do you think you are doing this? Who's going to listen to your podcast and all of those things? And prior to that, I got a journal and I wrote down all the achievements that I had had in my job and life and all the things. So when the voice started coming in, I would get my book and go, ha, here's the evidence. You did this. And I listed them, and I still have it. And I wheel it out every now and again, because it was evidence-based for me, because the voice in my head was going, oh, you're terrible at this. You're no good at that. But I knew that I had to reprogram my brain and my internal dialogue to say, well, actually, you're not that bad at that. But also, you don't have to be the expert. I was almost pitting myself to be, I have to be the best at this. And then I just thought, well, actually, you know what? I don't have to be the best at this. I just have to be good at it. There's going to be a million other people that can do a far better job, but I just need to be good at it. But the evidence for me was, and I did manage to rewire my brain, and I don't do that anymore. I don't have that voice, and it did dull over time. But I also learned as well, like you said, you acknowledged it. Thanks for that, and gone with that. Now I just do it. I just get on. I do the scary things, and I don't let that voice bother me anymore. I just do the crazy things. And this is where I find myself hosting a podcast. But you have to, first of all, you have to have the awareness of it, acknowledge it, deal with it, do something about it, as you just said, and have whatever that coping mechanism is. You're probably never going to get rid of it completely, but I really love that description that you gave. I've not heard it presented in such a way, and I'm really grateful to you for saying that, because I love how you pitched that.
And it can work whether it's imposter syndrome, whether it's sometimes you get anxiety, I suppose they're not too dissimilar, or whatever it is. We've all got that voice apparently not everyone does, but I've always had a voice inside my head that talks to me, and it's not always been in the most pleasant way, even though I'm quite an outward and positive person. And I feel that actually sometimes it's about noticing when that voice is useful to you and noticing when it isn't. And it's never going to go away. Certain things are never going to go away, but you can park it and move on from it.
Yeah. And learn to reframe. That's another clever thing. You know, you can say, oh, I always get this wrong. And you can reframe it to, well, sometimes I get it wrong and sometimes I get it right. And that's part of our job as coaches, isn't it? To help clients reframe that. But again, it's catching it and having that awareness of it. And I would confidently say that, and I know this to be true, a lot of successful people that I've met anyway, they may come across as having it all, knowing what they're doing, And you would never believe that they have the anxiety or that negative internal voice, but I know that they do. And I've been quite shocked, and obviously not expressed my shock, but you would be pretty amazed. And I think everybody has that. You're only human. Everybody has that doubt in their mind about themselves. And, you know, they get on and they do it. And, you know, someone will come to you afterwards and they'll say, "Was that okay?" And you think, "Wow, why are you asking me if that was okay?" You know, you're the expert. But and that thought comforts me. And I think, well, wow, that person's so successful. You know, they're brilliant at this, and even they're worried about their performance. But I come back to the graceful swan on the lake, looking elegant and graceful, and the little feet, because everybody, that's my view, everybody has those insecurities, and that they never go away. And that internal voice, you know, we have to control it to a certain degree, and we can't let it take control. But I just love how you put that together so eloquently. So what legacy would you like to leave as a leader? And that what you just said is probably that. And how would you measure the impact of your leadership? And, you know, you've probably coached and trained a lot of people in your career. But what do you think your legacy could be?
So I think for me, talking about like, what do you want your people to know you for? It is, I almost don't care. That sounds a horrible thing. But for me, I feel that everyone's potential is unlimited. And people often, it falls back to them, people go, "I can't, you know, your potential is unlimited. Your potential is unlimited. You can always be better. You can always choose to be better. You just might have to work hard at it." And I think for me, whether it's as a trainer or as a coach, it's helping people realize that. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like, you can achieve, you can always achieve more, and you can always be better.
Yeah.
Your potential, you can go as far. No one's ceilings at the top. Mm-hmm. You keep going and going and going. Doesn't mean you're going to get there. You can keep going and going and going. You can keep improving and improving and improving. You can keep sharpening your skills. You can keep improving your behaviors. You can keep making yourself, all these things you can keep doing. Yeah. So I think for me, that's it. I suppose I'd like my impact to be on the people I work with and I'm around, help them realize that their potential is unlimited.
That's pretty good to work in a coaching environment, to know that you can help someone aim higher, work harder. You know, you can send them off in a direction, and to be that person that can help people find that in themselves. I think that's a real privilege. And I've always loved the coaching philosophy, and I've loved being around coaches, working with coaches. It is a real privilege to be in, and to not care about being judged or anything like that, to just get on with it, I think is perfectly liberating. It's just a real privilege. So, Ollie, when do you do your exams? Are they coming up?
Today is my first exam for my apprenticeship, my only exam, and then the rest of my assessments are in June.
And how are you feeling about them?
Nervous, particularly about the exam, because I'm better at talking about the information I know. And if someone asks me a question, I can think, and I'm a more verbal communicator than a written communicator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something that I'm quite nervous about, but it is what it is. I know my stuff. That's a frustrating thing. There's a couple of bits that I'm not 100% on, but I know overall I know my stuff.
Well, having been through the experience myself, I wish you the very best of luck. And I agree. I find the conversation part so much easier, because I can think on my feet. And exams are exams. And I never imagined when I was at school that I would be doing exams in adulthood. But it's something that I've always done. I always seem to have a course on the go. I'm always learning. I'm just naturally curious about a lot of things, and it never stops with me. So it's just something that I love. My personal development never ends. But I wish you the very best in your exams, and maybe you can come back again on my podcast and tell me how you got on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. when I pass, I shouldn't say it, but when I pass.
Oh, when you pass. Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for your insights. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you very much for having me on, Amanda.
Thank you for listening to the Communicate with Confidence podcast today, and special thanks to my guest, Ollie Daniels. Join me on the next episode for more tips, tricks, and insights. You can follow me on Instagram at Coach Amanda Jane, or visit my website, amandajane.co.uk. Bye for now.